This is the sound of football.
And on this week's Sound of Football, it's international football ahoy with a welter of World Cup qualifiers and friendly matches to discuss. But the main topic of conversation is, who is the worst international manager in world football? Carlos Queiroz of Portugal or Diego Maradona of Argentina? There's that and a whole lot more on this week's Sound of Football. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Sound of Football. Once again, Terry DeFellin, Graham Sibley and I will be reviewing the past week's football action. And, of course, this week it's international football that dominates our discussions. So, Terry and Graham, welcome aboard as ever.
Hello, Chris.
Let's begin by getting the whole sort of South American scene dealt with. Of course, the big match, without any shadow of a doubt, this weekend was Argentina playing Brazil. Argentina, as was mentioned on some people on the pitch during the course of, I think, at the end of last week or the weekend, switched their game to Rosario in an attempt to sort of build up a bit more atmosphere, because I think in Buenos Aires, when they normally play, it's sort of, you know, athletics, track round and all the rest of it. But evidently that didn't help very much because, as many of you will have seen, Brazil rode out that game 3-1 winners. I was lucky enough to see the game. I think you were as well, Terry. What did you feel about the way both teams played?
Well, I thought Brazil put in a complete performance. They were very good going forward, as you'd expect them to be, although Robinho was a bit quiet. But I think they were most impressive at the back. They seemed to be able to absorb pretty much everything that Argentina could throw at them, particularly Messi, who played well to a point, but was unable to do anything, you know, genuinely dangerous with the ball. They seemed to be happy to allow Brazil, that is, happy to allow him a certain degree of license to do what he wanted to do. Before just simply snuffing him out. It reminded me of when you, I don't know whether you did this when you were a kid, but I know I did, when you'd practice your skills and play up against a brick wall. So you'd do this and that and shimmy a bit and then kick the ball and it just bounced off the wall. It was a little bit like that. He got all the moves right, but then just literally just hit a brick wall and wasn't able to do anything. Contrast to you know, on the other side, where Argentina didn't have the same confidence in their own defence against, say, Kaká, and they had Mascherano on him rather naively, you know, shirt pulling, you know, a really, really early stage. And,
Mascherano shirt pulling, wow.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing was, Graham, once he got to his, the referee gave him quite a lot of stick, because obviously Argentina were the home side, and the referee gave him quite a lot of slack, rather. But once the yellow card came out, and it inevitably did, because it was pretty blatant shirt pulling, that was it, and he had to stop.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was Kaká's through pass on Luis Fabiano's third goal, which was gorgeous, by the way, that sort of sealed the deal. So, I mean, it was really was, in many ways, it was men against boys. And in terms of their forward line, Argentina, magnificent, but, really shambolic in defence and... they'd have to be a doubt for qualification. I mean, if they drop into the playoff place, they'll be hoping that Mexico's CONCACAF rise continues. Because if they end up having to play Mexico in the playoffs, then I wouldn't really rate them against any decent side at the moment.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that CONCACAF group, isn't it? Just taking a side for the moment because the big names that you automatically think are in danger of falling into that playoff spot, aren't they?
Well, they're out of the six that made it into the final group, it is pretty much now just down to four, with sort of Trinidad and Tobago and I'm trying to think of the other one. El Salvador, I think it is, are now pretty much out of the running. So yeah, it's a case of who's going to end up in that bottom, in that fourth spot. And United States, I think, have been pretty consistent all the way through. But you've got Mexico, who started really badly and are now finally picking up. Costa Rica, who started really well and are now slipping. So it's just a real kind of, you know, when the music stops, who's going to be in the, you know, without a chair, so to speak.
Yeah, so yeah. It really shows that playoff spot in the South American group could actually be quite keenly contested for once. It was, I mean, with the exception of last time around when Australia managed to get through their
against Uruguay, I want to say
perennial playoff spot. But yeah, against Uruguay, that was on penalties, wasn't it, as well?
That's right.
Yeah. So it's always been a tough old match for anyone trying to break into the World Cup through that method. But I think if it is USA or Mexico, that's really gonna make that game quite eagerly contested.
Indeed. Going back to the Argentina Brazil match, it's just sensational football being played most of the time. Both teams are really capable of playing fantastic football, but it was literally the fact that Argentina were largely asleep at the back that was pretty much the main difference between the two. And as you said, Terry, Brazil just have got such a complete game at the moment. They can even sort of cruise through a match, as we saw in the Confederations Cup, where it doesn't look as though they're overly bothered at times, and yet they always come through at the end. They always manage to in this game they didn't even need to put in a bit of a kick near the end, because it was all done and dusted pretty much before the end of the first half, if I remember rightly. I can't remember when the goals were scored now, but certainly Luis Fabiano got one early on, and that sort of settled the nerves. And as we know, when Argentina scored, a brilliant goal actually by was it De Tolo? Argentina. Brazil just came straight back and got one back, and that restored the sort of two-goal buffer. So it was just a great performance.
Argentina worked so hard for that goal, and it really was out of the blue, though. They were never going to be able to orchestrate a goal. Such was the resilience of Brazil's defence that it had to be this sort of like stunning sort of like 30-yarder that was going to get a goal. But it was the only goal they were going to score, and of course, then just to really rub it in further. Brazil go out the other end of the field almost immediately, and a beautiful, beautiful pass from Kaká played Fabiano in, who chipped the goalkeeper, and it was dream football. It really was. And I mean, if this is an indication of what Brazil are like, then we might have to revise our predictions that perhaps Spain are favourites for the World Cup, because
it's got to be between Spain and Brazil already what I can make out.
We can only hope that the two of them will come together at some point in the tournament for what promises to be a fantastic match.
I think that's the thing. Certainly as England fans, you'd have to look at the prospect of probably having to face one or both of those teams in order to get to the final of the World Cup. And I'd have to say that as good as England are, and as much as they've improved, and they have, I don't think I would give us a prayer against either of those two. Certainly at Brazil, they were just so complete, so perfectly balanced. I know the Brazilians don't like the way Dunga plays, because he plays with balance. His tactics are spot on, and the balance of his team is absolutely superb. It's difficult to see past them on the strength of that performance.
It's interesting you say that, because Brazil from the long past did used to have that balance. They were a strong defensive team. It wasn't all just about going forward in numbers or just having loads of forward minded players on the pitch. Brazil was the team that developed 4-4-2, I am told. it's interesting that people get used to perhaps a perceived style that Brazil should be playing in. But I think probably the best teams are those that have always proven to be those with balance in them.
Absolutely, I'd agree with that 100%. I think that there's this conception of samba football amongst the Brazilian public and their media that is in fact perhaps a distortion of reality. It's a kind of, it's a sort of myth that maybe never even existed in the first place. But certainly, if you look back to their team, the World Cup winning team of 2002, I think they look to that and think, we should be outscoring opposition. That's how we do things, But this looks like a different proposition altogether. Much more realistic. Much more realistic winners, and Dunga may well be a coach who wins Copa America, Confederations Cup, and the World Cup, and yet still probably would be criticised as a coach by the Brazilian public, which is mystifying.
Yeah. So okay then. So come in, Chris and Terry. What do you think? Do you think that we're going to see a World Cup without Argentina?
That's a good question. I think they will get through. Like, I mean, there's been years when Brazil have sort of had a bit of a shaky qualification at the outset, and everyone suddenly says, "Oh, you know, maybe this is the year Brazil don't make it," and they always come through. I think Argentina will do the same. I'm inclined to feel. I don't know about you, Terry, but I think they will do it. They might only just get that fourth place. Having said that, although it comes to mind, Paraguay started off like a steam train, and they've gone really wobbly. I mean, they did win at the weekend. They beat Bolivia 1-0, but only just 1-0. It was a late goal, if memory serves correctly. So, I think Argentina's problem is that they're not doing too well away from home. I think that's their real key problem. They lost 6-1 away to Bolivia, as you remember, back in April. Yeah. So, if they can certainly fix the away form, then they're in with half a chance, and they could well sort of catch Paraguay. But you do wonder, kind of, in terms of morale and the way that Maradona's got, you know, running the rule over the team at the moment, just how far they can go, and whether they'll just the powers that be will sort of lose patience with Maradona and maybe choose to get rid of him. I'd say that's perhaps less likely. They're bound to give him perhaps a bit more time, but I still think Argentina will get there.
I think that it will be very close. There's only two points between them and the fifth place team.
Colombia.
Which is Colombia, and then there's obviously Ecuador as well, because they're on level points with Colombia. So fifth and sixth are on level. Paraguay are not playing as well as they were early in the tournament, in the competition.
I think Paraguay will probably pick up the odd. I mean, what they got then left sort of five. How many games they got left? I'm just trying to work this out now.
It's only three now, I think.
Three games left. So I mean, Paraguay will probably get one or two more wins.
Argentina have got Paraguay, and they've got Uruguay by the looks of things here. I can't find another one.
Well, the thing is, Colombia have been shockingly bad actually in this competition. They've only just got a couple of wins together to get up to fifth, which is where they are now. Ecuador have been a bit more consistent, but they've gone pear shaped. And as for Uruguay, they've really just lost the plot. So I think even by virtue of those three being pretty inconsistent, I think Argentina will be safe. But that's just my opinion. Sorry to intrude there.
No, I concur. I think that Argentina will probably even scrape the fourth spot by virtue of the fact that the teams around them won't be able to capitalise with so few games left. But where that leaves Argentina in terms of the future, I don't know. And Maradona, I really don't know. I mean, Maradona's only there because they can't find a coach to coach to replace Alfie Bass. So, in that situation, you know, I don't think that they've got any answers. I mean, I don't think they'd have gone with Maradona if there was an obvious replacement coach, and that isn't going to have changed in the last few months. So,
I've heard Osvaldo Ardiles is free because was it ESPN or was it Sky during the week?
He does Sky commentary.
Sky is a studio guest.
I really don't. I mean, I don't know that much about Argentina.
No. That was a complete joke. I just want to put that out right. Not in any way was suggesting.
Sorry, mate. I just thought. I was thinking, what is he talking about? No, fair do.
But I mean, I for one would love to see Argentina. I mean, I think they're playing not that far short of the. I mean, they played some fantastic football in the last World Cup, and they've got the potential to play just as well. And some of the stuff they were doing against Brazil at the weekend was great. So I'm optimistic we'll see some of that in the finals when they come around next year. This Wednesday, I think it's Argentina are playing Paraguay, so that'll be a key one. Really, that'll be a bit of a clincher, a six-pointer, if you will.
So what do we think? So we think Argentina probably will get through. What about over in Europe and Portugal? Do we think they're going to get through?
Well, of course, Portugal are the other team who are, shall we say, punching a bit below their weight, and they could only just about get themselves a draw during the week against Denmark. Denmark, of course, went in front 1-0 from Nicholas Bentner, of all people.
Class, super class.
He's a good guy.
I think, Terry, you probably saw more. I saw about a 20-minute spell. This sounds really terrible, isn't it? How unprofessional. But I only saw about a 20-minute spell from that game, and it was sort of second half, and it was in the lead up, I think, to Portugal scoring, and Portugal were trying hard, but to no huge effect up front. But you would have seen more of the game. What did you feel was the overall quality, shall we say, for Portugal in that game? Did they look like they're sort of just unlucky, or were they bit poor, really.
I think they got the draw they deserved, but I mean they left it mighty, mighty close. Mm. The thing about Portugal is that they've got goal scoring problems, and that's why they've got this Brazilian chappy into
Renta Brazilian, yes.
Yeah, to sort of like, you know, help them out. I mean, he scored a bucket load of goals for Sporting, and that's why he's in there. But he's only recently naturalised as a Portuguese, so it's not indeed. Like Deco, you know. He's, I mean, the guy's 31, so there's a bit of controversy about that. But I wrote a short blog post about this on Some People on the Pitch, and my view is that I think that it's, you peel away at Portugal's situation, and it isn't as grim as it looks, although it is pretty grim. Their problem was that Hungary are in second and they're in a very false position. They've played Albania and Malta twice and have taken, obviously, maximum points from them. Yeah, so they're not actually as good as they look. They haven't actually been able to beat anyone decent, whereas Portugal, on the other hand, haven't lost in Yonks. They've only lost once all campaign. So if you look on the positive side, and they've got to play Hungary twice and then they've got to play Malta.
Hungary did actually manage to beat Albania in their game, whereas Portugal didn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing. This is what it goes back to. That's what hence the indecent haste in getting the Brazilian striker in.
No, I was just going to say the intriguing thing is that much is made of the fact that they went on this run of three games without scoring. But if you look at it, they actually, two of those games were against Sweden, which, let's face it, is sort of forgivable because Sweden are a pretty sort of tricky team to play against. And the other one, I think, was against Albania, which perhaps they should have done better in. But so even though it was a frustrating spell for them, three games without any goals, they're sort of picking up now. But it won't have done the nerves of the authorities much good, I don't suppose, and hence why they're now sort of having to rush in, sort of.
No, I mean, I think there are mitigating circumstances, but I mean, Graham's right. You can't take away from the fact that they can't. If you can't score against Albania under any circumstances, you know, you don't deserve to go to the World Cup, and it may well be that they won't. There is a possibility of them taking maximum points from the next three games. And Sweden and Denmark have got to play each other, and despite what some people said on the comment section of the blog post, I know Sweden and Denmark are keen rivals, and I don't think they're capable of contriving a result for their own mutual benefit, especially when you consider that Denmark will probably be up by the time that happens. So I think there's a lot to play for, and Portugal may yet scrape through, but they will... They will need to play a damn sight better than they are at the moment. Liedson is the striker in question that we're referring to.
That's right. And a good player by all accounts. But I would say there's more chance of Portugal not getting to the final than Argentina, without a shadow of a doubt.
Agreed.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Completely agree with that. It's a tough group and it's a tight group. And of course, you know, we're assuming. And as distressing as it is for football fans to think that Cristiano Ronaldo may not play in the World Cup. It is equally distressing to think that Zlatan Ibrahimovic might not play in the World Cup, and of course that's the alternative if Portugal go through. So I hope that Sweden qualify rather than Portugal. That's my hope. But I think that it is not as grim as it looks for Portugal.
No. Okay. Well, other than talking about teams that may not qualify, I think we should tip our hats to Ghana for actually getting there.
Ghana, yes, first team from Africa to get through. They won their match. They're now, if I remember rightly from the article that I wrote only this morning, I think they're sort of on like four games out of four. I think they've now won in their particular group. So they're on a real high. And, of course, they got to 2006 World Cup. That was their first time getting there, so well done to them, as you say. Yes, they beat Sudan 2-0, that's right, I remember now. And so they're with Brazil, and I think we've now got like a quarter of all the qualifiers are there, so it's all hotting up there.
And of course, England could join them on Wednesday.
No, Modric, of course, as we mentioned before, because he's done himself an injury, as they say in footballing circles. And then I'm trying to think who it was that got injured actually in Croatia's game at the weekend, another player I do excuse me while I kind of fumble around and generally go into Hugh Grant mode. But I'm not sure. I think I don't. Did anybody see the friendly against Slovenia, England against Slovenia?
Unfortunately, yes, I watched the whole thing.
Yeah, it was a dreadful game.
It wasn't the most inspiring affair, was it, really?
Well, not really, and it certainly wasn't livened up by ITV's sterling coverage of it either.
People from ITV might be listening to this.
Yes, yeah. Hopefully they are.
Hopefully Andy Townsend for a start.
Don't get me started on it.
Yes, but I mean, much has sort of made. Well, there's been a lot of talk in the paper. I mean, we can sort of go on about the goalkeeping issue and who should be goalkeeper. But I think, if anything, what's been more of a key issue the last few days is this whole thing about should England be playing Jermaine Defoe or Emil Heskey? Discuss.
Well, I have an opinion on that.
Neither, you're going to say. No.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, I think that. Emil Heskey should play with Wayne Rooney, he should start, and between them they should batter the Croatian back line into submission. And if they can't contrive a goal between them, then bring on Defoe, and they'll have been softened up by that point, and Defoe can score. For me, you know, that seems to be the pattern. That seems to be how it works. I don't see how that cannot be seen.
But Capello's certainly a big fan of Heskey's kind of battling. Way of playing the game, but even with Defoe in such hot form, would you say that, Terry?
I don't think Defoe. I don't know what Graham thinks, but I think that Defoe is a fantastic impact player for England currently, and I think that they've got happened upon a method that seems to work quite well, and they should just stick with that method. And it is as I said before. I mean, get the two big fellas. I mean, and Rooney is a bull of a man. They're both big bulls of men. Get them up there. Get them doing what English centre-forwards do really well, and that's battering the life out of centre-halves. Uh-huh. And then get Defoe on as afterwards if required. I don't know. What do you think, Graham?
I think that's a perfectly reasonable approach. I think the good thing we have with the strikers that Capello's picking at the moment on the pitch and on the bench is the fact that there are lots of options. And it's not like the old days under Sven, where he was basically taking off, I'll take off Michael Owen and I'll put Darius Vassell on. Where you were basically going, I'm taking off someone good and I'm putting on someone not quite so good. I think now you've got options there. You've got, that's not working. Great, I'll put someone with a bit of pace on, or I'll put someone like Crouch on with a bit more guile and a bit more aerial presence. Or you know, just putting on Carlton Cole just to mix it up a bit. Sorry about that, Chris. But I think it's working quite well, actually, with the way it is. So
sure.
I'm with Terry to say, well, if it's not broke, don't. Yeah, why bother getting the spanners out?
Heskey does such a fantastic job up there. I mean, he's always said it's becoming a cliche. Right? He doesn't score that many goals, but you know, he's such a great focal point for the forward line. And you know, and he allows freedom for a player. You got a guy like Rooney there who can cause mayhem. You know, up front, as long as he's given a bit of space and a bit of time to do that, and Heskey is just superb at doing that.
I think the one thing you get out of Heskey is he's pretty much always a 7 out of 10 player.
Yeah,
And I think you know, in most games you play, he's quite consistent in that. It's not stellar. He's not going to be the man of the match. But no. Then again, you're not going to look and say, bloody hell, he's having a mare out there. Get
no,
him off.
No.
Conversely, he does normally come off, but I mean, it's an important job he plays, especially in games when teams are going to defend deep against England.
Sure. Yeah, great.
I think it's important to have someone like that because when it gets congested, players like Defoe can become nullified.
Yeah,
despite the pace and guile.
At Wembley, that's exactly what concerns me at Wembley. That if you start with Defoe, that he doesn't have that presence to be able to sort of knock over some people. And yeah, I mean, you would assume that the Croatians will be on the defensive; they will be deep. they'll be anxious not to get pasted like
yeah,
they did
and
last
sure,
time
and by the time that Defoe came on, I mean, one of their centre halves had already been nobbled, so so it made his job a bit easier as well.
Yeah,
exactly. And the thing, of course, that Heskey has is bags of experience as well. I mean, he's played in kind of pressure matches. So,
well, how many caps has he got now? 70 odd?
Well, it's got to be, isn't it? Really? I mean,
he's been around since he's been a fair few years now. Yeah, I mean. So, all right, come on, what do we reckon? So, we know what we think. All right, well, Graham and I said what we think. I don't know what you think, Chris. But what do we think Capello will do, rather than what do we think he should do? What do you think he will do? Who will he pick up front? Graham.
I reckon he'll go for Heskey and Rooney again.
And Chris, do you thought? Never mind what you think he should do. What do you think he will do?
Well, I mean, I've been really impressed by Defoe, but I think there's, you've won me round on the argument in terms of if it's not broke, don't fix it. So on that basis, I suspect he will just sort of carry on, really. I don't think he's going to make any wild kind of lurches tactically in different directions at this stage. I think he's just going to sort of play to England's strengths, really, and we've got the home crowd and so on, so it's going to be a case of let's see what sort of Croatia can do. I think it will be a narrow win. I'm inclined to believe that it will be something like 2-1, maybe something like that.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
But no, I don't think, I can't see there being sort of many changes. Obviously, Rooney's just playing out of his skin at the moment. So he'll be there, and yes, that's what I think.
Yeah, he's playing on a banana skin as well, by the looks of things.
Yes, that was I was listening, I must admit, part of the... a good part of the first half, I was listening to Radio 5 Live. It was Mike Ingram and Chris Waddle were commentating, and it was interesting sort of hearing how confused they were by the penalty and indeed how it came about. But yes, he's what's the phrase I'm looking for? He's a handful. Cheat, that's the word? No, sorry. Oh dear. So
no, we can't bandy words like that around. We'll get too much bandy. No.
Well, I'm sure the whole issue.
Well,
he won't because
the World Cup is a FIFA competition and not a UEFA competition, and FIFA don't do retrospective bans. Only UEFA do.
Oh, of course. There you go.
Just as a footnote to the whole thing, Chorluka was the player I was talking about. He's an injured. He actually got sent off in the last game, so we can assume that he won't be there playing for Croatia this Wednesday. So an enticing prospect. Any predictions on the scores, for what it's worth, fellas?
I think we can win.
England win by a goal.
What was that, sorry?
England to win by a goal.
England to win by a goal, fair enough. Okay, elsewhere there were many of the other home nations were playing, apart from Wales, that is. Scotland, good win for them, 2-0, but a bit sort of after the Lord Mayor's show with them, isn't it, really?
Yes, they're going to get beaten by Holland and they're going to go out of the World Cup.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's sadly the case for them. Good draw for Northern Ireland. It looks like they stand a very good chance of going through. It was an excellent game. I don't know if you saw any of the Poland-Northern Ireland game during the week. It finished 1-1, but it was a really excellent game. Kyle Lafferty was who scored for Northern Ireland. So they're heading for a crunch game against the Czech Republic, who have started off really badly. So... that's the one to kind of look out for. But Northern Ireland are playing the group leader Slovakia on Wednesday, so a win will be very handy for them, and they'll go top of the group, actually.
They've got an excellent chance of winning that game. They were very, very close the last time out, and unlucky, as I understand. Northern Ireland's destiny is in their hands for that group. They could win.
And as I think you said, Terry, on the TV preview on Some People on the Pitch this week, that I kind of hope that they qualify for the World Cup, and then for once and for all we can forget the two words Jerry and Armstrong, and then we can just kind of put that all to bed and move on in terms of Northern Ireland's kind of future legends and stuff like that. And Republic of Ireland beat Cyprus 2-1, so they're sort of keeping in touch with Italy in Group 8. So that's kind of like a broad summary of what's been going on. But of course, what's been happening since our last podcast is we've had all the hoo-ha with Eduardo's dive, and now Chelsea's transfer ban, which I must admit kind of came completely out of the blue. And if I do say so myself, I think I, on behalf of Some People on the Pitch, was one of the first people to break that story, being the news hound that I am. You can thank me later if you like. I mean, an interesting angle on that, I feel, is just now you're getting the same sort of frenzy, sort of in news terms, in terms of being reported, as you had strangely with the with the West Ham and Tevez thing. You get one sort of story, and suddenly all these other rumours, like when Sheffield United said they were going to sue West Ham, suddenly there were all these stories coming out that every club, the length and breadth of the country, going to sue West Ham, and it didn't really happen. Now with this thing going on with this fellow that Chelsea bought, suddenly all these stories coming out. Man United are going to be sued, and there's another 15-year-old player that Chelsea have supposedly bought, and all the rest of it. Personally, I feel that I think a lot of those stories just a bit sort of pie in the sky. But what do you feel about that? Let's go to you, Graham. You've drawn a short straw on this occasion.
Well, it's interesting because just this evening I was watching Skype, the yellow ticker of Sky Sports News, and was reading about Man United are now threatening legal action against Le Havre for the allegations. There was also talk today about I think it was Crewe and an unnamed Premiership the Premier League team about an approach made there. So yeah, all this stuff is coming out. It's probably stuff that is normally rippling around anyway, rippling in and out the doors of the FA or UEFA, but because the focus is on it, every time someone mentions it, it's going to be headline news. And I think this is going to happen right up until Christmas, when Chelsea have their hearing, because I think that's late. I think that's later on in December.
And do you feel that they'll have their hearing? The ban will be reduced, and everyone can go back to doing what they normally do. Do you think that's?
I hope it isn't reduced. I hope they do get banned for two transfer windows, because you know it's been a long time coming, this, for Chelsea. And quite frankly, if anyone else of the big four or any other team in the Premier League is guilty of it, they should be punished likewise. And I'm including my club Arsenal in that as well, because you know there is something very underhand and very seedy about the whole sort of like people trafficking business, which you know, if you want to get down to brass tacks, this is what it actually is. So the one thing, if it does get reduced to one, it will be disappointing, because I think in the last two January transfer windows, or I think two out of the last three transfer windows, January transfer windows, Chelsea haven't bought anyone anyway. So it's, you know, like one won't hit them, two will, certainly, especially if they're not bolstering up their team with more crap youth talent, which is the biggest joke, because this Kakuta is one of the rare finds that Arnesen's actually made. I mean, he spent millions on this youth set up, and most of the kids have actually turned out to be pretty much dud.
I was just going to say, it's actually interesting that Frank Arnesen, not that long ago, went to great lengths to say that Chelsea basically don't touch kids that young, or the you know, 15-year-olds or whatever, they don't touch them, but as you go up in age, gradually they sort of say, well, then we start looking at other clubs around Britain, and if they get to 17, then we look around Europe, and then 18, we're looking across the whole world. But at that sort of age, with this, you know, 15, 16, we don't really kind of you know, consider it. And now all of this, and you do wonder what they're really up to.
I was reading rumours today about Man United and this Le Havre player, about them buying his parents a house and paying them $170,000 or something like that. Now, of course, you know, these are internet rumours, I hasten to add, so, you know, they've got to be taken with a large pinch of salt, Mr. Lawyer Man. but it's a very, very unseemly business, isn't it, really? So it's just something that you hope that your club's not involved with, because, you know, it is rotten to the core.
It is difficult, because... But the sort of counterpoint to that is the argument that sort of people should be given a degree of license to make their own choices about their future. And there's a very good blog post written by Brian Phillips at the Run of Play, who argued that the punishment was too stiff. And his argument being was that you know, that the lad is entitled to move, you know, where he wants to, because he should be allowed to.
Mm.
And this sort of notion of the commodification of miners is really difficult and uncomfortable.
Mm.
I myself had a rant last year, you'll recall,
certainly,
about
yeah.
John Boscott, which, of course, it was perfectly legal, I should stress, but mm-hmm. the principle of young players, you know, moving, you know, under those circumstances is difficult for the smaller clubs, because they rely upon revenue from transfers from homegrown talent in order to supplement their incomes, in order to carry on. I mean, it's a revenue stream for them. And yet, you know, one could argue that, you know, they're entitled to chase the dream if they want to and go to these clubs. It just strikes me that the whole, I share with both of you, I find it all terribly creepy. And I can't help thinking that at its core, it's just an incorrect system. I mean, no club should really be in a position where it relies upon commodified labour to, you know, exist. You know, a football club should be a football club, and it should exist to play football and not to produce, you know, footballers via coaching methods and then make money from them, making money out of people. I mean, it is comparisons with slavery are offensive, but it is commodification, and it is to an extent trafficking. And there is a darker, deeply unpleasant underside to it, as a testimony of countless young African lads who are now currently, you know, somewhere in the sink estates of Paris, who have been shipped over illegally from Africa, you know, on the promise of trials, and
yeah.
then been abandoned when it's not happened. And, you know, so there is a darker side to this whole business, and I don't think that they're necessarily unlinked. And I guess that's just something that just needs to be, perhaps we just need to think about that whole setup. Maybe start again and try and think of something else. But I don't know. I could be overreacting, I suppose.
Well, it's a big can of worms, and obviously we're not going to be able to talk about it all in tonight. But I'm sure this is going to run and run, as I say, up until Christmas.
Quite
a bit of a sound
note to
end up on, isn't it, really?
For what it's worth,
yes, I'm sure there's kind of more to come on that, and I'll be very surprised if there isn't. So we'll deal with all that in due course when it happens, and let's keep our fingers crossed that it all blows over and we can all forget about it. But anyhow, the murky side of football rears its ugly head again. On a more positive note, I think we should head for the end of this here podcast by just telling you about a couple of things, namely. First and foremost, the fact that the Socrates London Football Bloggers Meetup is taking place this Wednesday in a couple of days' time. You can still come along, I think it's fair to say, if you cross our palm with silver. But no. It's all taking part on Wednesday. If you go to our website that we've set up specifically for this very purpose, it's socratesmeetup.blogspot.com. All the details are on there as to where it's taking place. If you are a football blogger in or around the London area, you're more than welcome to come along and join other people from websites like 200% and Soccerlens and Who Ate All the Pies and many others. Get a chance to meet other people and also find out about Football Threes, who are our sponsors, and the great online game that they're running at the moment. So go and find all the details online, or if all else fails, go to Some People on the Pitch, and there's a link to the Socrates website from there. Sorry, who was that who was going to say something then?
Not me.
Was it
me? Oh, okay, sorry. I beg your pardon. I thought somebody mumbled something. And how dare you even think of doing such a thing? And finally, just to sort of say, as we always say, that we are now on iTunes, this podcast. You can download the podcast via the Sound of Football website, which is soundoffootball.blogspot.com, or I say go to iTunes and you'll find all the shows on there. I reckon that just about wraps it up for this particular program. Good luck to England and all the other countries taking part in qualifiers this week, and we'll see you all again, I'm sure, this time next week. So from myself, Terry and Graham, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.